To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
We are back.
Hello.
We're back. It's a big deal now because season one is finished.
Yeah. What a season it was.
Yeah, what a season. It's in the books. It's all there. You can go back and listen to everything we've done and everything we talked about. Again, today, guys, season two is going to open with just our cephalopod liaison to the deep, Justin.
Coming in kind of how we started.
Yeah. And your resident firearms expert, Brian. Myself. Yeah. So, folks, what we brought for you today is we kind of talked about this. We knew we had to have a jump off to a season two. We were looking for about 35 episodes, which is a lofty goal.
Yeah.
Obviously, we weren't on the best timeline. We would have loved to have been weekly episodes, but...
Yeah, we did well for a while.
Yeah.
But life gets in the way. Schedules change. And the older you get, the harder it is to schedule fun time.
Yeah, you know, 2020 was wild, but 2021 was hellish for me.
Yeah.
It is baffling how much worse things could get. Like, in hindsight, I would do 2020 over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too worried about it. I was essential.
I mean, you went through things that few people can understand.
This is a fact.
But I feel like, to me, 2021, I kept on asking myself, like, is this really the apocalypse? Because this sucks. I haven't gotten to miss a day of work.
No,
like,
nothing. Yeah,
I still have to make all my bills on time. Mm-hmm. Like, all I'm seeing is stagflation and...
no zombies.
Yeah, none. No zombies.
We had more zombies before the apocalypse. And remember Florida zombie?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I can shoot a zombie. You can't shoot inflation. You can't shoot gas prices.
Yeah.
Like, so I would much rather prefer an enemy we could all kind of unite against over the enemy we should be united against, our government.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the only way I see that ever happening, the whole world uniting against an enemy, is if we experience some form of attack or perceived attack from... something outside of this world.
Much like, I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of reading the graphic novel The Watchmen. Absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. But that's, the main bad guy is kind of the main superhero.
Dr. Spoiler
alert. No, I can't think, Oculus, I can't remember his name. Dr. Manhattan is there to show you how easily it is to lose your humanity.
Yes.
Now, this guy was the smartest guy on the planet, and he realized the only way to unite the planet was to fake an alien invasion. And he successfully does this, and kumbaya. I mean, that's how the graphic novel ends. You're kind of set to determine what was right or wrong at the end yourself.
Yes.
Moral ambiguity is the most realistic thing you can ever find in fiction. Mm-hmm. And so I've always appreciated Alan Moore for that. He is kind of the master of moral ambiguity. Easily one of the most quotable writers on the planet.
Oh, God, yes.
If you've not experienced any Alan Moore, then definitely check him out. He's been writing brilliant things in very niche markets for a long, long time. And most of it has gone overlooked.
Swamp Thing. Wrote some Swamp Thing comics.
That was Neil Gaiman's first job, was working with Alan Moore on Swamp Thing.
Yep.
And that's when Neil Gaiman realized graphic novels could tell real stories with real emotional depth.
Yep.
And they kind of together changed the face of comic books. And I think very few people realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, Neil Gaiman did get somewhat famous for a Sandman series, which is absolutely brilliant. But he got more famous for his novels, and But you will find all the depths and brilliance of his novels in his comic books with Alan Moore and furthermore in his Sandman series.
Yeah.
Very few people realize that's where Gaiman got his start, was working with Moore. And he, to this day, says he's the most brilliant writer alive. He said he's today's bitter Shakespeare.
So Alan Moore was the inspiration for me to mark my 40th birthday by announcing that I was a wizard.
Oh, nice.
I was a wizard just like every other individual that has some form of a voice that can be broadcast out. And so that was this podcast and the comedy I've written. And those were my outlets. And that was my connection. And if you want to just get a quick, you don't want to go through the books, or graphic novels are so easy to read, though. They're epic.
Yeah.
But there's a movie called The Mindscape of Alan Moore.
Yes.
And it is fantastic. It kind of gives you an overlook of who this man is, how he developed, and it's fantastic. So, and you know, I really think that the craziness of 2020 and 2021 helped the podcast in a way, because it kind of drove me internal, and I put a lot more passion into things I thought about and what my outlook on life in the world was, because when you get everything turned over, you kind of have to choose where you're going.
Yeah. And I think it kind of collectively made us a little more self-aware. It isolated us, which one of the hardest things for people to do is sit in silence by themselves.
It is.
It is one of the hardest things to do, because you got to enjoy your own company to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people realized they weren't enjoying their own company. Mm-hmm. And they weren't accomplishing what their heart wanted, what their mind wanted. And I think it drove a lot of people to better themselves in a lot of ways.
I think so.
I think hardship always kind of does that. You want to see the best in humanity, you got to show it some hardship. Yep. I mean, you look at any natural disaster, you'll see the absolute best of humanity. You look at any kind of disaster across the world, and you'll see people that by all rights should be enemies saving each other. And so I think that was kind of the world's big hardship, big hurdle, was that isolation and having to look ourselves in the mirror. And hopefully we can come out of this in a way to where we're more unified. That's what I'm hoping.
That's the goal.
I think that should be the goal, if it's not. I think that's a hard sell with the era of social media, and there's really not much decorum left in the world anymore. There's no rules to interaction, and the anonymity of the internet kind of makes it easier to be a big asshole, and we can all be big assholes.
Well, the one of the things that I do not like that popped up these last 2 years is the Facebook banners that they come out with. Yeah. And to me, that is just such concentrated groupthink.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to see it, something and be like, oh, well, that's terrible. And you go click your little banner and put it around, and you just put yourself in that group. And you might not believe in that in a year or two.
Yeah.
So it's a peculiar thing.
It really is. You really see how easily the world is manipulated. We're pretty easily manipulated.
We like to fit in.
That's one of our... It's built into our brain to want to be accepted by the group, and that's a hard sell when it comes to thinking for yourself.
So, guys, we didn't forget. We have a bourbon for you tonight, and this is kind of a special one to open season two. It's more of a mid-shelf. It's a $30 bottle or so of bourbon. One of my complete ringers, one of the best bourbons I'd ever had for the price, was Evan Williams 1783. Now, it has gone up in price now. It is comparable.
People have caught on.
They've caught on. Yeah. Heaven Hills is actually the ones that make Evan Williams. They also make Elijah Craig. Heaven Hills is a really good...
Yeah. They're quality.
But this is Evan Williams single barrel.
Nice.
It comes in at 86 proof. It comes with this little tab here, and you're reading through this, and it says Whiskey of the Year, year after year. And then they list off Whiskey of the Year by the Spirit Journal, Domestic Whiskey of the Year, Malt Advocate, Spirit of the Year, Bourbon Category by Wine Spirits, Buying Guide, Spirit of the Year, American Whiskey Category, Food and Wine, Top Spirit of the Year, Best American Whiskey. Now, I wondered how new these were, so they actually won a couple awards at the SIP Awards in 2020 and 21. And yeah, they were gold. They were the best of. Again, Heaven Hill can just make a whiskey at a price point that I don't know that a lot of people can contend with.
Yeah, they've really nailed it for that mid-range, excellent whiskey and bourbon.
Now, what separates this is, I know because it's written on the bottle that this was barreled on 3/16/13. It was barrel number 465, and it was bottled on 3/30/21. So
that's awesome.
See, just a year old in the bottle. And they have said specifically that, you know, certain years are really good and certain barrels are really good.
Yeah.
And I've seen that with Jack Daniels.
It's just like wine in a lot of ways.
It is, yes.
You kind of get all your whiskey and bourbon's terroir from its aging process, as opposed to the soil and the grapes.
Yeah. It's the barrel it's aged in and
yeah,
the malt that year. So.
Yeah. The mix also has a lot to do with it.
Okay, this is different.
Oh, it's not nearly as, I don't know why I was expecting a little more spicy. It smells kind of sweet.
Yeah, it doesn't smell very, there's not a sharp alcohol
note
to it. So, well, I want to do this toast to the queen of the dumpster fire, to Ella.
Yeah. Oh, that's smooth.
That is utterly fantastic.
It really is.
Smooth at the front, a little cinnamon, and then it's just caramel and mellow and just no bite.
Yeah, no.
And it stays.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
That's a winner.
That's a contender. I have heard that the Elijah Craig single barrel is even better than this, but they said it's more complex, and I'm kind of liking that this is really simple.
Yeah.
A little bit of apple, maybe.
It is a very simple sip.
The palate's simple. Yeah, this is really good.
I think it's the simplicity that I like.
That's what I'm thinking.
It doesn't have any afterburn. It doesn't have any sharpness up front. It's just mellow all the way through, and you start getting the other flavors with the aftertaste. That's excellent.
That's excellent. So, you know, March of 2013 was apparently a good year for Evan Williams single barrel.
Yeah.
So this is definitely going in my winner category. I don't know if it'll be one of my top choices for budget bourbons, but it's going in there.
Yeah. I would say it's got to make the list.
So, guys, we wanted to sit down and to open season two. We didn't want to dive too heavy into a topic. We actually just kind of wanted to do a year in review.
Yeah.
Again, overview how we came to do this and why. Overview some of the things we talked about and some of the stuff we're looking forward to talk about. And get a little bit up on some modern events. I mean, we did the whole episode last time on the war in Ukraine, which now seems to have essentially died. Putin was saying it's about Donbass now.
Will Smith slapped Chris Rock in our attention deficit disorder.
Kicked right in.
Right in.
COVID doesn't exist anymore. Though I will say, great news on that front. And Clint called this, the Viking said, that when the last strain came out, that was it. That was the best news we could ever get. Indiana hospitalizations for COVID are the lowest they've been in 2.5 years. Now, what gets me to that, if you go back 2.5 years, isn't that predating when we supposedly had COVID?
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's that. Yeah. We're doing good. I go out and I don't get paranoid when people cough. Moneypenny's extraordinarily functional non-RNA, non-deadly vaccine is still not approved.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. I just don't understand that, but maybe they don't have enough money.
Yeah.
They're not big enough.
So. Yeah.
Today, actually, was it today or was it this week? Mr. Elon Musk, who had one of the biggest events the last couple years in getting his rocket program off the ground, putting people on the International Space Station, and then landing the rocket.
Yeah.
He has put his hand in a way, and bought a controlling share of Twitter.
Yeah. At 9%, 9.3 or 4% of Twitter, so, he is the controlling stakeholder.
I don't know what he's planning here. I had a theory a while back that he had some new way to run the blockchain.
Yeah.
And that he was going to drop his own cryptocurrency, but I don't know if that's going to happen. He looks like he would just rather take direct action, and he said he promises improvements, so we'll see what happens.
He seems... the interviews I've seen where he kind of lets his guard down, it seems like he's not really for the things he seems to be for.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a big supporter of things generating mass wealth that have no intrinsic value, this digital currency and stuff. I think what the value he sees in a digital currency is that it's free of a government.
Free of a government.
But like with the... NFT, the non-fungible tokens and stuff, I've heard him say some things that kind of surprised me about that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're a flash in the pan sort of statements. He's not come out against them, but he's definitely made some statements. You think one of the biggest tech geniuses on the planet, that he'd be all for it, and he just doesn't really see their value.
Yeah.
And I don't really either. I don't understand why someone would pay $40 million for a picture of an ape. It's beyond me.
Well, what do we put value in? I mean, that's your different school. That's Austrian economics,
it's
right?
It's signs and simulacra, which was required reading for the Matrix films. And symbols start to replace actual items in society on a long enough timeline. And we're there to where these symbols don't even represent anything in reality anymore. And I think that's kind of a scary place to be.
Yeah.
When the things we value most have no real life, tangible, intrinsic value, that's a scary thing.
It's a scary spot. And my little sister is my other kind of sounding board on a lot of this stuff. And she actually just suplexed my mind the other day. We were talking about what's called slipstream media and just the way that media is consumed and the way that people don't all exist in the same reality now.
They don't.
Because the media, and this includes stories and things you know and all of this, they are a reality in and of themselves. She also dabbled into a little bit that time is not linear.
Yeah.
And we can see that, and that is like, I didn't even want to go too deep into that because I was already...
Because, I mean, that's been a thought since the 1890s, mm-hmm. is that time is not linear. That's been poked and prodded by many a philosopher and many a physicist and scientist. The reality bubbles, I think it's always been true to an extent. If you live in one society versus another, your reality's different.
Yeah.
The big difference I see is, so you take our fiction, the fiction we consume, primarily with the new way through streaming how we ingest television. Television is almost a thing of the past. And let's say, for instance, let's take a hit show like I Love Lucy. At its peak, 40 million viewers, no problem. Now a hit show is lucky to hit 10 million because there are so many options. So you have these pockets of, because we are able with so many options and so much control over curating what we take in as an individual, it creates these pockets, but I also think there's good parts of that and bad parts. I think it hurts our unity as people as whole. Because we don't have as many common grounds. Mm-hmm. And especially when you look at this over a long time period. We're kind of at the beginning of this, being able to curate everything you take in. But let's talk 100 years from now. How different will we be?
Right.
I always try to look at deep time and look at long-term effects of things. And there's no way to predict the future. But... It's interesting to me just to see in my lifetime how media is consumed, mm-hmm. has changed so drastically. I mean, to go from a 40 million viewers sitting down, they had to know what time to sit down. They had to be on the right channel to watch the same show at the exact same time. And then that gave them the ability to discuss it around the water cooler, those water cooler moments. Mm-hmm. The water cooler moment doesn't even get discussed in advertising anymore because it doesn't exist.
Well, and there you go. There's your example of how, and again, this actually came into my mind listening to Alan Moore. I thought he had thought this concept up. He did not. I thought it up.
He just inspired it.
But this, the water cooler is your perfect example of liquid.
Yeah.
So we go from a time of information travels in a solid.
Yeah.
If you didn't know Buck, who made arrowheads, you would not know how, or who knew how to forge iron. You would not know how. You had to be taught these things directly.
Yeah.
Then we go to, that's the time of solid. We go to the time of liquid. And mm-hmm. this is your several channels on the television. You can get books. You can read these things. That's liquid. You
mass still
have
printing.
It still has to soak out. You have to seek it out. And then now we're heading to this time of steam where you don't even have to watch the Oscars or whatever information to know exactly what happened.
Information is pervasive. And there's a, I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast. There is a fantastic short story by Jorge Luis Borges, who was, he's the master of magical realism. He's the master of the short story. He would bring the depth and thought of a novel to his short fiction. And he wrote primarily in the 50s and 60s. I believe he's Chilean or Argentinian. I'm not sure. But he wrote a story called The Library of Babel. And The Library of Babel predicted the internet. It predicted the age of steam because it is about a society living inside an infinite library. Everything that has ever been thought of is written somewhere in this library, but there is no way to fact check any of it. So you have these sects that pop up, these very divisive sects that pop up that believe this to be true and believe this. And it depends on what you've read. It depends on what information you've taken in. And it involves like changing your mind, like how an individual can change their mind, but to be able to change a populace is almost impossible.
Yes.
It's a pretty brilliant how, I mean, this is in, I believe, 1962. He's predicting the age of steam. He's predicting pervasive, a glut of information. In the age of information, we're starving for knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think it's I think we need to turn to minds that see reality for what it is. In times like this. I'm not a full follower of Nietzsche, but the Übermond, the Superman, the great mind, I kind of believe in it. I don't believe they should be all powerful, but I do believe they should have a say in things because there are always these outliers, always. In every generation, there are outliers that see things differently. And I think we're going to have to rely on them more to navigate this future world.
Well, I would like to make a recommendation to everybody. I actually had this discussion recently. An exceptionally intelligent person, one of the smartest people I know, asked me why I didn't trust Snopes. And I was like, well, I don't. It's like, you know, Snopes has literally started out as a guy that started dating his girlfriend that was a stripper, and they obviously, you can see their biases if you go look. And Snopes has been biased. Most of the time, you got to think about how many massive amounts of things Snopes fact checks daily. Yeah. They're doing stuff that just makes perfect sense. So there's a giant skeleton found in Nevada. They're going to do an article on that, you know.
Yeah.
Let's say all vanilla extract synthetic is made out of beaver glands. Well, it's not anymore, but it can be. And actually, a lot of your perfume has beaver butt gland in it.
Yeah.
But Snopes, I've tried to just kind of explain this, but again, it's real hard to say, you know, these things they did really were like not okay. But there's a very interesting place called allsides.com, allsides.com. And they do media bias. They do bias charts on fact checkers, bias charts on other things. And you will find that, Snopes leans left. There is only one extreme left-leaning fact checker.
Yeah.
Which is CNN.
Yeah.
And there is only one extreme right fact checker, which is Breitbart.
Yeah.
Now, they also do the media bias chart, which is exceptionally interesting because when you do this, you look at this and a lot of the stuff dead in the middle, I didn't really think about. The AP, Axios, BBC, the Christian Science Monitor is centrist.
Yeah.
News Nation, Newsweek, Reuters, Real Clear Politics, which I would have thought leaned, but it does not. I thought it would be right. The Hill and the Wall Street Journal are centrist. They rank there.
I've found through trial and error that many times I've been able to trust the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
And which has always felt off to me mm-hmm. because my critical nature says no. But I've turned to them for some of my research.
Well, this is where things get disturbing to me.
Yeah.
If you go to the extreme left, you start out with Alternet, BuzzFeed News. These would make sense. They're scandalous. They whatever's popular. CNN. Democracy Now.
Yeah.
Daily Beast. HuffPost. The Internet. Jacobin, which is a very interesting name for a news agency. Mother Jones. MSNBC.
Yeah.
The New Yorker. The New York Times. Nation. Slate. And Vox. Now, these are pretty much when I am just cruising Google and I have to be pinned as centrist or right, and there's no way about it. These are still the articles that consistently pop up for me. On the far right, you have the American Spectator, which I do believe I've read some just bogus stories from them.
Same with Breitbart.
Breitbart, yes. Breitbart is interesting. They definitely speak in hyperbole and will jump the gun on some things.
Oh, yeah.
They've also
They jump to conclusions immediately.
Yeah. The Blaze, which is an interesting one because that one kind of went back and forth. Yeah. And then I guess it's landed back over there. CBN, which I have no idea what that is.
I don't know.
Daily Caller, which that is, I believe, Ben Shapiro's, right?
I believe so.
Daily Mail. Daily Wire, I don't know what that is. Fox News, obviously, which Fox will probably end up going more left now that Murdoch's son is running it.
Yeah.
Federalist, National Review, very funny, the New York Post opinion. Not the New York Times, but they even have similar font.
Yeah.
Newsmax and OAN. I think one of them, OAN, was actually funded by Russia.
Okay.
So, which is very interesting, that would fall far right, but it I mean...
Well, I mean, you look at... I have to recommend, again, Burning Down Moscow.
Yeah.
A fantastic documentary that just shows how it was a great piece of investigative journalism, and I don't feel like it's biased in any way. I think it flat out proves how Putin came to power
mm-hmm.
and how he used propaganda and killing innocent citizens to do it.
Yeah.
And through that, you see a lot of American companies mentioned in that documentary. You see a lot of American politicians being named in that documentary. And this was not about America.
Burning Down Moscow is hard to find.
It really is. It was really easy to find 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It has become almost impossible to find. My first time watching it, I found the entire thing on YouTube with a simple search. Mm-hmm. And I have scoured the internet to try to share it to you and cannot find it. I can find allusions to it and people quoting it, but I cannot find it. And I know it was released as a investigative journalist piece through several outlets, as well as at the end documentary. But all I can find is allusions to it. I think Putin has made some sort of deal or figured out a way to suppress it. But it is blatant. It is pretty blatant. And he, I don't know, we know for a fact when Moscow was ran by the Russian mob that where they were making their money was New York City. Where they were making their money was the East Coast. The traditional, what we consider Russian cliche gangster in the tracksuit and wife beater with a gold chain, that is a reality. And they were prevalent throughout New York City in the mid-90s. I mean, and that's where the Russian mob made its money, and they made a lot of legitimate money here.
Very, very random. Mr. Elon Musk just was quoted saying that he thinks Vladimir Putin has more money than he does.
Really?
He did.
That doesn't surprise me. He does have some very powerful friends willing to hide money for him.
Yeah.
We've known that for decades. He's very intelligent. I think Putin is a master of being a supervillain. I really do. Yeah. And I think he revels in the fact that he's the world's supervillain.
He legitimately thinks that his people are being given a raw deal, I believe.
Yeah.
And that they are still bound for some kind of greatness. I think he sees himself as like a big defender. And I don't know. I it would be interesting to see, because Russia, you got to look how terrible things were for Russia, even in like World War Two, where they didn't have enough rifles for their soldiers, but they'd be like, we'll just send men at it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrible. Like, you're not being respected as a citizen then. And very, very interesting.
I kind of feel like he has, I mean, the guy rarely wears a shirt. Yeah. I think that says enough about his ego
and
there.
How old is he? 60, isn't he?
He's got to be. I feel like he might view himself as perhaps an Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
Or a Caesar. I think he has a very grandiose view of his position in the world and the destiny for his people. I fully believe he's proven he has a ton of pride in Mother Russia. Mother Russia comes first in his mind.
Yep.
And that can be scary because you don't know where those limits are.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at 2001, his war with Czechoslovakia that he designed, he came into power under, and it turned out being he couldn't win it. He wasn't going to lose, but he couldn't win it. And he felt like that was a slap in the face. He felt like that was a black eye for Mother Russia. And I feel like he's still fighting to get that win. I feel like that's what this entire Ukraine thing is.
Yeah.
Is him fighting to get that win to show that they are Mother Russians and they are powerful and they are strong.
The thing about Ukraine that people don't talk about a lot is there is a lot of internal strife in Ukraine of people that do consider themselves Russians versus Ukrainians.
Eastern, I believe is it the Dubas region?
The Donbass.
Donbass. Yeah,
I may be saying that wrong. Again, guys, we read a lot and don't talk a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I pronounce things incorrectly all the time because it's words I've only ever read, so I'm guessing.
Per Putin now, the Donbass area is where he's focusing on, and it is because of Russian separatists, which I said it from the start, something is so peculiar about this whole thing. I don't know. I will say this. I don't think Putin is getting senile or crazy or anything, and I don't think he would ever launch like a nuclear device anywhere. I think that's dated at this point.
I think my hope is that his pride ends before that line. That's my hope. But bruised egos have done some crazy things.
They have. The mutually assured destruction thing, I think that sunk in for everybody, and they realized not only will I go broke, but my legacy will be destroyed.
Yeah. And I think he's very concerned at this time and place and his age with legacy. I think you're right there. It makes me wonder, though, I don't think he'll go nuclear, but we know he has bioweapons. We know that. And that is a step down. And he's already been labeled as a war criminal.
Well, that is one of the more peculiar things that came out of all of this is that there was an active push, and it was considered Russian propaganda, that there were biolabs the U.S. was running in Ukraine, just like we sent. Biological experimentation got banned here at some point.
Yeah.
That is how Wuhan got all of our gain-of-function research and continued it there. But that was the story. That, hey, in these areas are these biolabs. And then they're like, that's Russian propaganda. And then there were articles like, will Putin gain access to all of this biolab research? And I'm like, wait, are those really there?
Yeah.
So that is highly concerning, no matter which side of this you're on.
Yeah.
Why were they there? Why were we still doing this? Did we not learn last time? Jesus.
Yeah, I think no matter what side you're on, it does have the potential for some real escalation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already been labeled a war criminal. I mean, our president has come out and said he has committed war crimes. He is a war criminal. So once you make a statement like that, it's like a person that gets accused of being cheated on so many times. Eventually, you're going to be like, well, if I'm going to have to be punished for it anyway,
I'm going
to
do it.
So that's the potential scary part for me. I don't know. I try to always look at big picture, though. I really don't think he... The scarier part for me is, will this be a foreshadowing of what China does with Taiwan? China is the much larger threat. They own 87%, something like that, of our debt. They've been outbidding us in every way in Africa. They have more resource than anyone else on the planet right now, and more people. They could throw 1 billion people at a world war and be fine. They could be better off for it. Their economy would flourish if they lost 1 billion people.
I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but the UFC managed to make headway into China.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we had Li Jingliang and all these Chinese fighters. And they did an event in China, and I do believe it was Li Jingliang was the one that won that, and there was no hesitation. He went up and did this chant, and the whole stadium did it with him. And I remember looking at my friend and be like, man, that's going to be a problem. Like, these people are unified to a degree that we don't get here at all.
It's hard telling with China, though. Every one of those could have been military. China has done that. China has done that. We've had investigative journalists that went into China and literally had things staged for them, just like in North Korea, have entire baseball games staged for them. And there's not a real audience member in the audience except for this American. They're all military, walking in lockstep to go get a hot dog from the stand.
Very random, and we will actually switch to our much lighter subjects, but a somewhat family member, it's once removed on Ella's side, lives in China. It's a teacher.
Oh, awesome.
And did an article when COVID first went down. And the most interesting thing I pulled from that article is that throughout China, all the news that they're giving there is that the U.S. brought the virus to China at the military games.
Yeah.
This was well known. Now, strangely enough, a lot of my friends that are contractors or in the military got sick around that time.
Yeah.
No idea what was going on. Someone apparently did probably dump that at the military games. Think about it. These are your youngest, not youngest, but these are your probably healthiest examples. They have PT standards. They're probably not going to die from that, and they're going to spread the heck out of it because they're flying on planes and doing all these things, getting put on different bases. That has been a concern to me. I absolutely do not feel at this point, and this is the most political statement I'll probably make, that that came from someone eating a bat. I think that has been blown completely out of the water and was asinine to begin with.
I think that's been outright proven at this point, that the Wuhan bat theory was absurd at best.
Yeah.
And I've learned just by looking at history, no government can be trusted. Nope. If your government's not up to something, they're not a very effective government. They literally have, that's part of the game. You have to be up to something. So I trust none of them. I have to vote for my side. Because I don't want to be under communist rule. That's strictly it. Freedom is my most important thing. And yes, I feel like we could have more freedom in this country and we could have a better, more functioning government. Mm-hmm. But I'm always going to vote for my side because even if I don't like them or trust them, they ensure what freedoms I do have.
So
I don't trust either side. And honestly, nothing on a moral grounds would surprise me from any of them.
And we really have to recognize that we don't live in quote capitalism.
Yeah.
The ban on onion futures trading, that would have never happened in a fully capitalistic society. Yeah. You would never have stimulus checks and all these programs under a fully capitalistic society. It would all be based on what provides profit, what the people want, and all this. We're in a hybrid. We live in a hybrid.
It's similar to how the world has honestly never seen a true socialist society. I think at this point, though, we have to quit having bad words when it comes to facts.
Yeah.
You say socialism and everyone's asshole puckers. You say communism and everyone's asshole puckers. There are good ideas embedded in both of those things. Most of them do not work. I will give them that. But so you take, I can't think of the name of the company. There is a truly socialist company in Spain right now, has been up and running for 40 years. They set a cap on what the top guy can earn and what the bottom guy can earn, and it can never be more than 15% apart. And it functions like a dream.
Yeah.
There's so much pride in their work. It's crazy. But in a pure form on a government level, it doesn't work. We've proven that. But we can take pieces because pure capitalism in its purest form takes away humanity. It just does. It ignores humanity, profit over everything.
Yes.
And socialism doesn't work because it ignores the nature of humanity completely.
Absolutely.
So we have to take the best ideas from all the ideas. And we act like those are the only two ideas.
And I'm telling you, for me to grow up and the experiences I have and have the opinions I have, and then to watch COVID and watch the stimulus checks reverse credit card debt.
Yeah.
I knew forever, like, we're a hybrid. We have so many socialist programs. 19, that we run.
Whenever the New Deal was signed, we became a hybrid.
And guys, I am going to promise you this is coming. I'm going to promise you. Moneypenny and Garfunkel both have strong opinions on socialist economies, and Moneypenny wrote a thesis on how women's health care evolved in Russia, because in such a quick span of time, they flipped. They were the, hey, we're the new, we're the best thing ever, we're communist, and we're going to take over all these countries around us, and we're all going to make the same guns and the same cars and the same, I don't know, everyone's going to work the same, and then it flipped back.
Yeah.
And she's got some interesting takes on that, and I cannot wait for that.
That will be interesting.
Awesome.
I'm a huge fan of Lawrence Lessig, as we've discussed. Mm-hmm. He was actually in the USSR as it collapsed because he saw the collapse coming, and he knew these countries were going to have to rebuild and rebuild quickly. And he helped write several constitutions. And I think, I'm not going to expunge on his ideas or expand on his ideas, but look him up. Read some of his ideas. I think he has some realistic things we need to do to fix our personal government and other governments around the world. I think it's really easy to get caught up in this tribalism, as though there's only two ways of thinking, or there's only democracy and communism, or there's only red-blue. And because we're a tribalistic animal. That's who we are. That's our base nature. If we can fight, because everything in society is against our base nature, if we can fight more and evolve a little more past that moment and look at things logically, which we rarely do, politics are about emotions, not logic. Have a conversation on Facebook and you'll see that full force, no matter what side you're on. We all fall for cognitive dissonance. We all have our blind spots. We all have our pet peeves and kind of our built-in ideals. But I think if we can get to a point as a society that we actually just look at what works. Does it work? Does it function for the majority? And equal opportunity does not mean equal result. I don't expect equal result. I don't want equal result. There's always going to be people that don't meet the result. I want equal opportunity for every single human on planet. I think that's something we should be striving for, and the way we're striving for it does not work. We've proven it.
This is the thing, man. Even you and I, we're moderately intelligent people, and I will say moderate.
Yeah.
We don't speak the same language as the people that should probably be really running things and thinking things out for us. And there's this weird spot that I'll never forget. This came from Jason Litzy. He's a good friend of mine. He's also exceptionally intelligent in his own way.
Yeah.
We were talking about someone that's so smart, but just was falling for stuff that never they should have and believe in people they shouldn't. He said, well, she's really intelligent, but she's gullible.
Yeah.
And that has stuck with me to my core for so long.
I mean, that's kind of almost a trope or a cliche at this point.
Yeah.
The incredibly book smart, but no street wisdom. We're moderately intelligent. The people that should be tackling the big ideas are massively intelligent. Like, when I listen to someone like Lawrence Lessig speak, I got to be honest, I'm looking up words. I'm looking up concepts. I'm looking up theories.
Yeah.
And I love it because I was taught a very long time ago in my childhood by my grandfather, who's a very wise man. He said to me, if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're probably in the wrong room. You can't learn anything being the smartest guy, always being the smartest guy in the room. So I like to think I'm at least moderately intelligent. There are things I'm completely ignorant about. I'm as handy as a rock. I can actually think of more uses for a rock than my handiness. For a species that is defined by its use of tools, I missed that boat somehow. But I am moderately intelligent, and I'm well-read and well-researched. But I don't want to be in charge.
I think you and I both had enough hardship in our childhood that we gave up the concept that the most efficient way of thinking is the best.
Yeah.
The most efficient, the least effort.
Yeah.
I'm not path concerned about resistance. This in my life right now, so this package sounds wonderful. And we just didn't get that option.
Yeah.
We had to kind of break that down and be like, nah.
Yeah. And
pass.
I think everyone has their, what I call their bitter ghost. Things that happened in their past or their childhood that have affected them in a negative way. And I think we all, because there is no manual for this thing called life, we navigate our own way and we learn to take the easiest route. We learn to take this route because it seems like it'll be less difficult than this one. And sometimes when that's not true. Sometimes we pick the least logical route because we feel like it will avoid the most conflict.
I've had this happen to me actually recently. Some stuff. Guys, I cannot explain to you. 2022 has not really slowed down for me. It has still been this chaotic roller coaster. And I don't know. We supposedly entered the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
We left the Piscean age and into the age of Aquarius. And we left the age of knowing to the age of learning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of believe in that because, like, everything I read about being a Libra and on the Virgo cusp, I'm like, that's fucking me.
Yeah.
And then I've also based all of my relationships that have been passionate and successful. We were compatible, which is very interesting. But yeah,
I feel that learning. I'm a very self-aware person, or at least try to be. It's one of the things I strive to be, is self-aware. Mm-hmm. And to always try. I feel like I'm only in competition with one person, and that's me.
Yourself.
Yeah, I want to be better than I was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And but then you still... I've always said, if you want to see how crazy you are, put yourself in a relationship. And I've recently had one end. And yeah. And I just being self-aware, I see the mistakes I made along the way.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off to be 40 and be like, oh shit, I'm still, still going down that road, huh?
I am it's perfectly fine to announce this is out in the public. I am in a relationship with Moneypenny.
Yes.
And I really feel really good, because I feel like I had that experience with Ella for that amount of time to where we developed as people together. So I am experiencing something totally new, but I have a framework that I've not, I said this the other day, I've not seen anywhere else. And what's been happening, why I say that we've entered the age of Aquarius and left the Piscean age, is people are coming at me and telling me things that happened multiple years ago that they didn't want to mention to me back then because they felt like it would upset
yeah.
the balance of everything.
Yeah, it would rock.
But now, for a random reason, I get a message from them. You know, I haven't spoken to them in a year. How are you doing? And the conversation goes there. And it's just kind of shocking to me the way things are changing. I was told recently that a friend of mine and I have to be psychic. I don't believe that. I believe that I've spent so much time dealing with every level of society that I can just see indicators and ticks.
And I think when you grow up with someone who has an impossible standard, mm-hmm. and the goalposts are always moving, you become very sensitive to what kind of mood they're in, what are we feeling like today, where is the goalpost today. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of develops a sixth sense.
A sixth sense. My foster kids have a sixth sense.
To read people. Yeah, it's a survival mechanism. I have it as well. Mm-hmm. We've discussed that at length. I do have a book, and you might not be ready for it yet. It's okay. A very small book. It is a very deep book. It's called A Severe Mercy. It was one of C.S. Lewis's...
It's my sister's, one of her favorites.
Yeah, it's a brilliant book. It's one of C.S. Lewis's best friends. He actually helped write it. It deals with a lot of what you're going through.
Yeah.
What you've dealt with. It's about the loss of a soulmate. And it's A Severe Mercy. And it's a... I highly recommend it, but I would say only read it when you're ready.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those that you're going to tap into some things.
Yeah.
You're going to hit some notes.
Well, and just as example, Facebook's real good at tormenting you in a way.
Yeah.
With ghosts. But
yeah.
It is what it is. But also...
Facebook memories can fuck the fuck off.
I can go ahead and talk about this now. We're working on our little section of my house, which will be the studio for the podcast.
Nice.
And potentially there will be video. So, ladies, you can see that the bachelor, Justin over here, is a good-looking guy. He's really got it, girls.
I'm not currently looking for a relationship. I'm, if anything, life has taught me is that I'm bad at them. So I should come with many warning labels.
You're getting your first one here. Warning. Does not play well with others.
I spent 10 years single. I was the happiest I've ever been in that decade. And then I fell for a good one, and still fucked it up somehow. So I'm an expert of fucking things up.
Yeah.
That's kind of my superpower, is fucking everything up.
Well, I will say too, man, 10 years single, there's going to be these habituated patterns that you've picked up, which we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
You can't just completely diverge from those all at once.
Yeah.
You know, the guardedness and all these things.
I feel like... I mean, you always feel this way, but because I've always focused on being so self-aware, even since childhood, that I feel like I spent that decade learning to love myself and respect myself first, because to be alone, you have to enjoy your own company. Mm-hmm. And I got to a place where I enjoyed my own company. The problem is, is that means the person coming into your life is not in competition with someone else. They're in competition with your own company. Mm-hmm. And they're in competition with your comfort zone and this life you've built for yourself.
Yeah.
And it becomes very difficult. But when those walls do start to come down, they tend to crash all the way down. And now you're just left vulnerable. And I'm not good vulnerable. Yeah. I'm not great at it. Not very practiced at it. I like my walls and I like them high and thick. So... Mm-hmm.
I was having a discussion with Moneypenny recently, and I was like, listen, you and I are onions. We spend time together, and it seems like every week there's something. I didn't know that. I didn't know you used to do that, or I didn't know you spoke this language. And yeah. Like this, all these layers. And I was talking about another person, like, they're a radish. Like, that was literally how I felt about it. I'm like, look, we don't speak the same language because there's no depth to the conversation.
Yeah.
You're not going to find out anything interesting or new. Yeah. Some people are, you get what you get. And when you've got this many layers and you've been through this many things, you have to have someone on your level. And again, yeah. Guys, that's what I talk about. When you find someone that's on your level and they're intelligent and they've got these things that you like, I'm telling you.
I call it finding your weirdo.
Finding your weirdo. You will get possessive. Like, I've done it. I've been there.
Yeah, it's there's not an experience like it. Mm-hmm. And it's such an odd experience when you look at it, when you take being human out of the equation. If you were as an alien, to watch two our coupling and mating rituals would just be ridiculous to watch.
I actually had this epiphany a while back. I was watching some TV show and I was like, holy shit, we're birds.
Yeah.
We're birds.
Yeah.
And then I heard later that there's a term peacocking, and that was kind of the pickup thing. Like, yeah, it's peacocking. I was like, well, that fits. We're doing mating rituals and just singing and chirping and
yeah.
I don't know.
It's pretty crazy.
Posturing.
And I'm just not... I'm not good at it. I'm very good at having interesting conversation, deep conversation, as long as it doesn't involve me. As long as the conversation is about single-celled organisms 8 billion years ago, I can go as deep as you fucking want.
Hold on, you brought me up, and that's true.
Yeah, but the moment you say something real about me, I'm like, that hit a little too close to the inner walls there.
Mm-hmm. Did not like
that. So, yeah, I think we're all just a work in progress looking for a weirdo. It's odd because I did not want a relationship. Did not want it for a decade.
You told me that repeatedly.
Yeah, did not want it. Had no interest. I had found the one and it was me. Like, I loved myself.
I'm good as fuck.
I took myself on dates. I bought myself stuff. I was great. Treated myself.
Best person I've ever done.
Yeah. I always got exactly what I wanted somehow. Exactly. Like, won every argument. Like, it was amazing.
I have lost some arguments with myself. That's a fact.
I have too, but if you lose an argument with yourself, part of you still won. So it's a zero sum game. Mm-hmm. But it's very odd when you finally do let down that wall. That wall that you thought was thick and honestly invincible. You didn't think there was anything that could pierce it. You let it down and you become a sniveling, vulnerable, like, heart-sick human being. And, that guy's got to go. Like, not a fan of that guy.
Take him out like
the KGB. I fully believe to be a hopeless romantic in this day and age, you have to be first and foremost utterly hopeless. That is rule number one of being a hopeless romantic. So I am at heart a hopeless romantic, but it's going to take some pretty big guns to get to that point again. I think we're all just a work in progress.
Man, maybe one day you're going to run into the person that's read all the same books you have.
See,
would that be a challenge, though?
I don't think I would enjoy that, because I like learning about... I want new books. I want someone who can tell me, oh, shit, that sounds awesome. Check out this book. Want someone who can keep up with me. I don't want the same kind of crazy. I want complimentary crazy. And, again, you think you find it. And
I can tell you as an adult, complimentary crazy. Like, when you go in and think, well, we're so different in these regards.
Yeah.
I don't know if this will work.
Yeah.
But then you realize, no, that's exactly what you need.
Yeah.
You're just scared to leave your comfort zone.
All the cliches are cliches for a reason.
Yeah.
And opposites attracting, that's a cliche. I don't want my exact opposite, but complementary crazy is a must. I think in the dating world, you have to first and foremost realize that all of us are insane. There's no such thing as normal. Once that's your baseline, now you're looking for someone equally as crazy as you, but in a complementary way. They cannot be the same amount of crazy in the same way. You will drive each other crazy. You will be oil and water. And they can't be crazier than you because you're going to think they're nuts.
And guys, if you want a place to start, if you just want somewhere to start, ignore all the pop psychology articles and the bubblegum magazine articles and find an actual place that talks about zodiac compatibility.
Yeah.
If it calls you out, like you're going to be bad at these things, that's probably somewhere you can trust.
Yeah.
And just see who you're compatible with, because I tracked this after I first kind of learned about it, and my gosh, it is across the board.
It is one of those things I have fought believing in almost my entire adult life, and every time I challenge it, it proves me wrong. I have this insane bias against it, but every time I challenge it, it proves me that it's real.
Yes,
it's happened numerous times. I am a Sagittarius Scorpio cusp, and I was told by two fabulous gentlemen, they're a couple, almost 20 years ago, that ran a astrological website. They wanted to know where I was born, what time. They wanted to star chart me, which I knew nothing about.
2 a.m.
They came back and said, you're fucked. They said, you're absolutely screwed. You are a being of duality. You are opposites. And
you ended up a Gemini. That's what happened.
Essentially. Essentially.
Very, very, very interesting. Obviously, I'm a Libra. That's my thing. I used to always joke that, you know, the everyone else's zodiac, like, you're going to get it today, and you're positive energy and thinking. And my would be like, quit being a pussy, Libra. But yeah. I am a Libra. And one of the highest compatibilities for Libra are Geminis.
Really?
I am a master of Geminis. That's like, I was a Gemini. And I am a Libra Virgo cusp. Also, totally fucked.
Yeah.
Because the Virgo is going to mean that you're analytical and you weigh everything out. And the Libra is going to mean you want justice. And when you are those two things, you realize real fast. Hence my 10-year career in trying to fix the world. And it was like, it's...
Yeah.
That's where I ended up. But
yeah,
this worked out wonderfully. I dated a Gemini the second time. Actually, this is my third girlfriend ever. That's crazy, but it's true.
That is crazy.
The other two are deceased, which is also crazy.
That is crazy.
Really concerning to me.
The realization just hit me, because I knew who the first was.
You did.
That
was a terrifying moment and another terrifying moment.
But yeah.
The most recent person I'm with actually is also a cusp, baby. I don't know, guys, if you saw the post on Facebook, but we had a whole table full of people, and all of us were cusps.
That's a...
You have like four days to be a cusp.
Yeah, I feel like cusps are drawn to each other.
Yeah.
Another thing that keeps getting proved to me.
This was the most fantastic thing. Not only do our main signs align, but since she's on the other end of Gemini, our cusps align.
That's so crazy.
Compatible. That's like, well, that kind of makes sense. And if it's all BS, it doesn't matter. It helps us really settle in and be like, you're great.
Yeah, it gives you something to believe in.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that there's no intrinsic meaning to life. But that gives you the freedom to create your own. And if in creating your own, you believe a good way to spend your time is to sit back and laugh at all the absurdity of it all, that's perfectly reasonable meaning. So that's my goal. But people believe in much crazier things than the zodiac, and they keep on nailing it on the head. I don't know how they get it. Apparently, there's nothing that's compatible for me being a double fire sign cusp. I'm a Yeah. Full of passion. One wants to run away and start a new life at all times. The other wants control. Wants to know where their next meal's coming from always. Wants to know where they're sleeping
at. So the way to fix that is to be filthy rich.
Yeah. And I don't know that I'd be great at being a multimillionaire, but I think I would nail it. I think I'd knock it out of the fucking park.
I would like to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Just once.
Yeah. I think I would be a perfect balance of compassion and kindness and empathy and being a fucking rock star. I don't even want to be a rock star. I want to just travel and observe the world. I just want to see it all.
I would be fine with actually being, like, go up there, fucking rip. Do it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. I guess I write stuff all the time. I mean,
me too.
That's one of my outlets.
That is my outlet. Without writing, I would have completely lost my mind many, many years ago. Probably my teen years.
Yep.
I've been writing. I've been a struggling author for over 20 years at this point.
I still say, man, we should... pull one of your pen name stories up. And I mean, even if you want just me to read it, you should do it.
The problem with that, so as an author, so Hemingway said, writing's easy. You open up a vein and bleed onto the page. Mm-hmm. And I fully believe that. As an author, you put your heart and soul and sweat and tears and blood into this piece. And it is far more terrifying to send that into the world to live its own life and let strangers pick it apart than it is people you respect.
Yeah.
It is far more difficult for me.
That's a fact.
For someone that I think the most devastating thing someone could do is for me to spend 3 to 5 years working on this beautiful novel that speaks to my soul and my being, and for someone to read it in 2 days and say it was okay.
So
I think that might murder me.
I have a potential solution to this, too. I actually have some pen name stories.
Yes.
From, actually, several other people. So, if we do some pen name short stories, we don't ever have to say who they're from. And I have these, and I could reach out and be like, hey, how about this one? What do you think about that? Some of them have been...
With complete anonymity, maybe.
Magazine?
But... I feel like I'm weird enough that people would pick out...
I assure you you're not, because I'm thinking of one right now that I really am going to reach out to. Can I read this? It's brutal, and it's perfect.
I tend to write really brutal surrealism, and it's pretty unique. I mean, my tastes bounce all over the universe. I mean, they span the galaxy. So what I write spans the galaxy, but my tendency is... to push it as far as I possibly can. And so I feel like anyone that knows me would be able to pick out one of my works.
Pick that out.
I
think I'm going
to... But it's an interesting challenge.
Let me dig into this. Because
give me a couple months to make a story that I feel is viewer ready.
Okay.
And then we can talk more. Because right now I have more works in progress
than complete. They're always works in progress.
Yeah. It's every day I come up with something new. I can create characters literally hundreds a day. That's where my mind goes. Yeah. When I'm idle, my mind's creating worlds and characters. That's what it's always done. I'm a master escape artist, and I just do it right here. It's kind of crazy, because if someone was to witness me writing, all they would see is me staring blankly into space, twisting my goatee, and they'd be like, that dude's doing nothing. But if they saw the galaxies I was forming...
Yes, it would just hurt.
Yeah, if they saw the depth in my own mind I was in.
One of the authors that I'm talking about that is... I don't know if it's published now or not, but they were... using me as like a rough draft.
Yeah.
Bouncing
as and, a beta reader.
One of the most amazing things I can remember ever doing, the first ever three-dimensional movie I watched was Avatar in an IMAX.
Oh, man.
In Indianapolis. The big IMAX, the good one.
Yeah.
And I will never forget sitting back in the intro. I was reaching up trying to like touch the bubbles that were coming out. And then that movie... just the color palette.
That's a mind-blowing experience. And
the
way it did,
the motion, everything. I was completely enthralled. And in this story, there's a full I believe it's a full chapter that I had the same type of like vivid imagery and emotional experience as I had watching Cameron's blockbuster, greatest movie ever. That he made Aliens, and then he made this. Yeah. It's like all the tropes are there. And this was completely out of left field. One of the things was these frogs, and the description of these frogs just, I don't know, it was next level. And that's a next level author.
Man. That is what every author should strive for.
It's fantastic, and it's there.
So, for me, what draws me to writing and reading is I've always felt like it was literally magic. Mm-hmm. Literally magic. You take 26 arbitrary symbols, essentially, and put them in a particular combination on a page, and I am sucked into your world. I am, great writing sucks you in. You have no choice. The moment you start reading, you're in that universe. You're in that world. And to me, that is a magic spell. That is a real life magic spell. And my goal as a writer is if I only one reader is sucked into my world and enjoys my world and is inspired by my world, I have done what I came to do.
Yes.
I have never thought of writing as a way to make millions or, I've never really thought about an audience. Honestly, I've never thought about an audience. I think thinking about the audience preferences can be crippling to any artist. Mm-hmm. So I just want to partake in the magic. I just want to be a magus of words, and I want to invite people into my world and them enjoy the experience.
Absolutely, man. And I think we're getting to the point of closing this. And
yeah,
I need got to. I'm going to go ahead and put my money where my mouth is. So this is not a story.
Yeah.
This was essentially a song that I wrote, and obviously it'll kind of make sense when I say, you know, what was going on. It was December 5th that I wrote this, and so here we go. Eternal revolutions. Nothing slows for us. Entropic destruction, the slow march to the end. There is nothing left when the focus is far enough forward. All hope is meaningless. My only wish now, to become the dust that you are. Rays of energy dispersed for eons, colliding on their course to nothingness. Peace and zero. What was there ever for us but to exist during the inevitable? The heart longs for peace, peace that will be found when we become the dust that you are now. One course, one fate, nothing but the end assured, finding solace in becoming the dust that we always were.
That's beautiful, man.
Thanks, man. That was written, I believe, very early in the morning, one morning, and it just, that was kind of like the whole mode of how I thought about everything and how I coped with, you know, literally a person that was everything to me, being dust now.
Yeah.
And it put all of it in perspective. Like, that's what we've been, what we are, and goddamn, love this moment, man.
Yeah.
Love being able to do this.
You got to love every moment because you don't know when you'll get the next one.
Yeah. And I'm still, it's weird because I'm still.
And what do you have to fear? You are literally a ghost-driven stardust skeleton.
Yeah.
That's what you are. You are a ghost-driven stardust skeleton. That's all it is. You are the same stuff that stardust is made of.
You are the same stuff that light is made of.
Yeah. It's amazing.
You hit you.
Yeah.
Consistently every day. You make every color.
I've got Alan Moore in the head. It's not Alan Moore.
Alan Watts.
Alan Watts. We are the universe experiencing it. We are the universe observing itself.
Yes.
The book. If you've never read the book by Alan Watts, it is a game changer for most people. It was kind of my Bible from 16 to 18.
Yeah.
And it really helped shape how I see reality, honestly. Mm-hmm. So, but that was a beautiful piece, man.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. And it is interesting that the first post I made about season 2 starting was an Alan Watts video.
That's awesome.
It is.
That's awesome.
It is, guys. So, we're going to sum this up. I want to do a quick review. We're just talking about everything we've gone through. Obviously, it's been unbelievable chaos. I am impressed every time we manage to sit down and do these.
Yeah.
it would be very easy for me to just kind of slip off and try to become something new, forget all this, but I don't want to. This is this was too big. It was too important to us.
I feel that too. My interests are so broad and they're ever evolving that sometimes you get so busy and so caught up in life that it stays hard to keep the passion and drive that first kept you doing something. But I do think this is a great platform, and I really do think we can get better at this. I think with practice and focus, we could really turn this into a platform, a voice. Not to say what we've done is bad. Everything can improve.
Everything can improve, and I just, sitting on the sidelines here, watching myself, I can hear the improvements. I can hear how things have changed and gotten better, and we're moving on and forward, everyone. And what I want you to take away from tonight, Alan Moore and Alan Watts, the Allens, Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman, there are many brilliant minds out there to help guide, be a guiding light out there, weirdos. Hopefully we can also be a lighthouse for other weirdos. I like to think we are that, and can help inspire some of y'all.
If we manage to get Elon Musk official into the Tales from the Dumpster Facebook page, that will be a life achievement right there. Also, Justin Wren, if Justin Wren were to join us, that would be awesome.
That would be amazing.
And you all are already in the Tales from the Dumpster Fire Facebook page, so go watch that Alan Watts video.
Yeah.
And comment on it. Tell us what you want to hear about. We kind of wanted to come tonight with just an overview of, like, why the last year's been so chaotic and, you know, what's been going on. And we have talked to you repeatedly about not talking about politics, but what we mean is that we don't want to talk about partisan current.
We don't want to get down in the trenches, we don't want to partake in the tribalism. When we talk about politics, we try to keep an overview, look at both sides with equal eyes. Sometimes those are jaded eyes, I can admit. I don't fully trust it. Any of it. We just don't want to get bogged down with tribalism and argument. We want to keep the ideas flowing. And we're all about new ideas. I feel like that's kind of part and parcel of what the dumpster fire is about new ideas. Let's do away with some of this old stuff that's obviously not working and talk about new ideas. There's nothing wrong with exploring something new.
So we are definitely going to reach more into the Bro Code 2.0.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion, I did not come up with this. This is a current that's flowing through our society. And we're starting to see the major dysfunction that we have together. And it's getting more obvious.
Yeah.
And I think people are moving towards that. We're just putting it into words.
Yeah.
We're going to have so many more weird science facts. And guys, we're bringing back the penis facts.
Yeah.
We're doing it. We might even do a penis fact episode. I don't know.
I've got a number of them loaded up and ready.
Loaded and ready. Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to thank everybody again for sitting through our rants and ramblings. I hope you took something from this. If not, you've got some awesome recommendations for authors.
Yeah.
So, everybody, just stay weird and keep on dumpster diving.
Praise God.